The Record on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman with David Hyde. So last night I checked on the turkey that's been thawing in my refrigerator for the past 3 days. I noticed a little label on the package I hadn't seen before. Apparently my turkey is rated 3 on some scale of sustainability. I have no idea what that means when it comes to how this turkey is going to taste. So I suppose it depends on how I cook it. And there's the rub. Thanksgiving dinner, the most stressful meal, I think, for home cooks. From timing to the final touch gravy, Sarah Dickerman writes about food for Bon Appetit, Slate, The New York Times, at her website, frequent guest on our station, and she's here to talk turkey, gravy, or whatever. Hi, Sarah.
Well, hi.
Great to have you in here. And well, let's talk turkey before we talk gravy. Last week, I interviewed a food safety investigator for King County Health, and he told me that I needed to keep the frozen-ish turkey in the refrigerator every day per 4 pounds. So I've got a 16-pound turkey, which has been sitting there. That's it, right? That's the way to thaw it?
That's the best way to thaw it, always. So it's the gentlest way. If you need to rush things up, say you were feeling it was feeling pretty crunchy, you can put it in a sink with cold water running over it constantly.
So say you're a listener who said, I was about to head to the supermarket into the frozen food section to pick up one of those frozen bombs today.
Oh, I think that's not, I think I'd suggest a turkey breast that's not frozen at this point, if you're really that last minute. That said, there should be some fresh turkeys in supply. I actually called and checked since we were going to be talking about organic and heritage birds. You know, I called and checked at the Edmonds PCC. They said they had some turkeys that are soft enough to go tomorrow. So go ahead and check with your meat market and see what they say. You might be able to find something. But I wouldn't try to defrost a turkey that's totally hard.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
everybody
exactly.
knows. You've seen those things wrapped in plastic in the deep freezes.
Yeah.
Well, that brings me to this question about the spectrum of available birds.
Right. Mm-hmm.
From the branded butterball basted pop-up bird
right.
to things like organic turkeys, fresh
right.
turkeys, heritage turkeys, heirloom birds.
Right.
What does that all mean?
Well, it's interesting because you're mentioning taste and then you're also mentioning sustainability. And those may or may not overlap, you know, in terms of what you're looking for. So, you know, the standard familiar brands like a Butterball that you get at the supermarket grocery store. We don't know how old they are. They've probably been factory farmed. So those are choices you can make. You can get what's called a fresh turkey, but as we've noticed, sometimes fresh turkeys are quite frozen feeling. They're air chilled, I guess, which is slightly different from that sort of deep rock solid freeze. But it does imply that they've maybe been processed much closer to Thanksgiving Day than, say, something that might have been done months ago.
What is the difference between an organic turkey and an heirloom turkey or a heritage turkey?
I guess you could have an organic heirloom turkey.
But an organic turkey is not necessarily an heirloom.
It could be the standard broad-breasted American white standard. Or it could be one of these older breeds. So let's start with organic. Organic means that they are no antibiotics. It means they've been fed organic feed that was raised organically itself. And so that gives you a different bird than you know, that just guarantees that part of it.
Right.
So then the heritage is actually using older breeds that are no longer quite as popular because they have narrower chests, usually.
They're not a broad-breasted.
They're not a Jane Mansfield.
The Twiggy of turkeys.
Exactly. And they have more in common. You know, you can see that they came from wild turkeys rather than the turkeys we're, you know, familiar with dealing with. It makes a trickier thing to cook. I think you mentioned you'd cooked one.
I cooked one once, and my usual guests, because I have the same group pretty much every year, said, you know, no offense, but we like the other kind better.
Yeah, and I think if you have that model in mind, it's very hard to go away from it. I've done it myself. I agreed. I found that I liked it, but it didn't taste like Thanksgiving-ish
no.
to me.
Okay.
So what I would do if I were doing a heritage bird, and I think they're really fun to play with, and I love that farmers are working on preserving these old breeds, I would, you know, just ditch the whole idea of roasting it whole. I would brine the chest either with just pre-salting it or liquid, and then I would braise the legs.
You mentioned that word brine. You know,
yes.
every chef
word,
says
right?
brine. Now, I do something called a dry brine right. because I'm a lazy person. I put salt yeah. on this bird. I will take it out of its plastic wrap today, dry it, wash it, dry it off, and then I'm going to put salt all over it.
Right.
And I mm-hmm. let it air chill, and that's it.
Yes, and that's a form. I mean, brining could be a liquid bath filled with salt and or sugar, or it could be just salt pre-salting it. But I think pre-salting any turkey helps it.
What does it do?
First of all, it seasons it with you know just salty flavor, which is nice. But it also pulls if you do it ahead of time, it pulls some moisture and retains moisture in the interior of the bird.
So have you already been brining your turkey for 3 days?
I salt it. I just salted it. I like brined turkey, but it requires a certain amount of room and negotiation that my refrigerator can't handle.
Well, I always wonder about that because I have friends who swear by it. It's one thing if you have a 5-pound chicken. It's different for a 16,
right.
18, 20-pound turkey.
I think the coolest way to do it is you can find a food safe bag. Now they make ones that are turkey size, so you can use a little bit less of the liquid and you can figure out a way to do it that way.
Okay, so we've got our turkey brined either in a brine bath or we've salted our turkey. Mm-hmm. How do you cook your bird?
When I'm home, which I'm often traveling to see family, and then I'll just roast it. But when I'm home, I smoke roast it in my big green egg.
Wow. So are delicious. You doing that tomorrow?
Yeah.
How long?
Which is a production, and it just feels right because I feel like no matter what, you know, Thanksgiving should be a little bit of a razzle-dazzle show.
Uh-huh. How many hours of smoke roasting?
You never know quite, which is, I think, the vexing thing about Thanksgiving. So I'd say on the order of 4 hours. And nice low temperature. And I'll do it over charcoal, but with some applewood chips in there. It'll be good.
And then when it's done, you let it sit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't worry too much about food being piping hot, especially on Thanksgiving.
No, because the thing that's supposed to make it piping hot is the gravy, right? Isn't that the point of gravy, which is why we had you here. People seem incredibly nervous, including myself, about gravy. Now, my Thanksgiving is a kind of collaboration with an old friend of mine. He comes over after I've cooked the mm-hmm. bird. He does the carving. And he makes the gravy.
Oh, well, that's a sweet friend.
So it is. And plus, we have a good time in the kitchen. There's beverages involved.
Right.
It's fun. And everybody else is in the other room. But for gravy 101, how do we think about gravy?
Okay. First of all, don't be too nervous. It's just a very rustic sauce. If it's not perfect, it's very hard. I mean, you're not going to get this velvety, French, sort of like absolutely satin perfection. It's a sauce that's thickened with flour, so it's got a little bit of a rustic quality too. So first of all, don't worry too much. I like to use the super fine flour if I can get it, the Wondra flour.
Mm-hmm.
This year I have to do a gluten-free gravy, so I am going to be experimenting with rice flour or sorghum flour. I have to figure it out.
Wow.
And then the other, what was I going to say? Oh, then I like to kind of separate out two of the tasks that are often done together. Instead of doing the roux, which is the mixture of turkey fat and or butter and flour,
mm-hmm.
that's the base of a gravy, I like to do that in one pot and then I do want to get all those drippings from the roasting pan, but I do that as a separate step myself, just because it's a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it all in the roasting pan. So let me...
Yeah, walk me through it. So I've got the pan with the drippings, and you're scraping them up, and
right. So you've got the pan with the drippings. Pour off the drippings, and it will separate
right.
while you're working. You can then deglaze the pan, which means adding liquid to the pan. Wine is nice.
I use vermouth.
Yeah, vermouth sounds mm-hmm. wonderful. You could use chicken stock. You could use water. Anything that will loosen up the pan. So you put the pan over two burners. This is why it's nice to have a real solid roasting pan rather than an aluminum pan.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it in an aluminum pan. Again, make it work. It's fine.
Okay.
Turn it on to kind of like a nice medium heat. You want it hot, but you don't want it scorchy. And you just scrape and scrape and scrape and scrape with the flat end of usually a wooden spoon works best.
And then what do you do with that stuff?
Then pour it when you've really pretty much cleaned the pan and you've done some of the pan cleaning work.
Right.
Pour that off into a separate container and then make your roux in the just a little saucepan.
Okay.
And the roux is a mixture of approximately equal amounts of fat and your flour. But you want to scrape, you just want the fat. You don't want all the, you know, you don't
all
want
those
the liquidy
black
drippings. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Just the fat. And you cook that, again, not over an intense heat, but for a while until you lose the raw taste. Then you add the hot drippings, the hot deglazed liquid into that a little bit at a time. And the most important part lump-wise is to whisk really carefully with the first half cup of liquid you add and whisk. And then add a little at a time of the deglazing liquid and then to turkey stock or chicken stock.
I should say mine has cream and vermouth.
Well, that's fantastic, too. That
yes, it, and so that's the hot part of your
right.
meal. And that turkey is supposed to be sitting there before right. you carve it for a while because, the juice goes.
Yeah, your turkey's going to continue to cook once it's out of the oven. So that's part of it. And that will help it retain the juices. If you slice right into a turkey when it's just out of the oven, all the juice is going to spill out onto your cutting board. You'll have a big mess and you'll have dry turkey.
Okay, so I'm going to have moist turkey. I'm not stressing too much about the roux and the liquid, and I'm making my gravy. Mashed potatoes or sweet potatoes at your house? I'm deconstructing
you
your entire meal. Maybe I'll just come over there, Sarah Dickerman.
Well, I am not a huge traditionalist in my Thanksgiving dinners. I'm happy to try new things. This year, we have a guest who's gluten-free and dairy-free, so we're actually, instead of mashed potatoes, I'm going to do a gratin with chicken stock instead of cream. And so a gratin is just like really thinly sliced potatoes or scalloped potatoes kind of layered in there, and I'm going to layer it in with caramelized onions, maybe some celery root and potatoes, and just that will be our nice starchy element.
So there's not one thing on your table at your house that you have to have every year?
I guess the closest thing is I do a raw cranberry relish, which is what we did in my family growing up. I also usually do a cooked one, but the raw one is just, sort of whole oranges, cut into quarters, cranberries and sugar and a little apple all sort of word together in the food processor. And it's like a little salsa almost, or not really a salsa, but a little salsa-ish in taste.
This is the best part about Thanksgiving. So one piece of advice that you'd give to listeners to keep at the forefront of their minds, or maybe tape onto the cabinet while they're cooking?
I think just try to smile and enjoy it and understand that, it's a big production and no one expects everything to be absolutely seamless.
Or not. Just don't drop it on the floor when you're taking
exactly.
it out of the oven. That's food writer Sarah Dickerman. You can find more of her writing at her website, sarahdickerman.com. She's on Twitter as well, at Sarah Dickerman. And after the holidays, in January, you can find something that Sarah writes. It's like the antithesis of what we've been talking about. The Food Lover's Cleanse for
yes.
Bon Appetit magazine. Mm-hmm. And so this is how in a month and a half we detox, right?
Well, I don't really believe in the word detox for eating, but it is a way to reset your cooking habits after the holidays.
Happy Thanksgiving, Thank Sarah. You. It's The Record on KUOW with David Hyde. I'm Marcy Silman.